Welcome to Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Being a fireman, father, veteran, husband, world record holder, and Ironman, he brings stories of experience to impact your life while challenging you to live it. What do you want from your life? Why do you want it? Are you willing to go through the challenges to get there? If you have the courage to take that first step, let this podcast be the catalyst to start your fire
while you bring the resilience to make it continue to burn.
Our lives are made up of moments called right nows. So let's get started. Forged in the Fires podcast with your host, Fireman Rob, begins now.
We got the same blood, the same blood. Stay by your side, it's right or die. We've got the same blood.
All right, welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today's guest, amazing individual, 30 plus years in the United States Marine Corps. I retired as a lieutenant colonel, but even more after he was. He's the founder and the president of Soul Survivor Outdoor. I don't want to wait anymore. I want to get into this conversation. Rick Wolf, great to have you here today.
Hey, appreciate you having me on the call today. And, we're out here doing what we do, getting ready to meet Navy commander on a ship here in San Diego today and talk about what we do. So great that. Times, but just really appreciate being able to be on the call. Thank you.
I love that. I mean, you know, you've been in the Marine Corps. You were in the Marine Corps for more than 30 years. I always like to go back because you get different answers from different people. And what made you? Do you remember back 30 years? What made you sign on that line?
Yeah, well, long time ago, obviously, but grew up in a family that was patriotic. My dad served in the Army. He was drafted during the Korean War era. Actually, served in Germany as they were occupying Germany after World War II. And so he was actually there instead of Korea during the Korean War. So both things were happening at the same time. But I just grew up in a family that folks wanted to serve and give back to our country. And I think there was also this idea that, I want to serve something bigger than myself. Yeah. And so the Marine Corps, I looked at it like, okay, where's the toughest branch of service that I can go? If I'm going to, and whether that's true, like whether that that's, guy. Yeah, well, I mean, whether that's true or not, I'll let other people decide that, but it was my impression at the time. It's like, all right, if I'm going to do something, I want it to be worthwhile. If I'm going to serve my country, let's just pick the toughest job, or at least as I perceive it. And, nothing against the other services, because I've had lots of experience with the other branches over time, and I admire each one of them. But at the time, coming from a family that felt like, you give back to your country, right, and also right. wanting to be part of something that was bigger than myself. So I think those are the two things that drove me the most.
Yep. I love it. And you were a Marine Corps Reserve, right? Was that for the 30 years or?
Yeah. So the way that the Marine Corps was working at that time, and, people think of the reserves as kind of the one weekend a month routine. Well, I served on continuous active duty initially in the Marines for about 4.5 years or so. And then was in the reserve community and did that for a while. And then 9/11 happened, and I was back on active duty full time. And so I kind of came and went from active duty. And many reservists these days serve on full-time active duty for prolonged periods of time. And so I had a lot of that, the nearly 30 years that I served, I probably served about a third of that on continuous active duty in different roles in different places and so forth. And so it was a very interesting, career, coming and going kind of plug and play, just a super interesting time.
I think it's interesting because a lot of people don't understand the reserves or the guard or anything like that. They don't realize how hard you do work, because it's not, the weekend warrior, they call it, but you have a full-time job. You live in that community. You embrace that community. You get called up whenever they need you. What was it like? Give the people who don't really understand what it is to be a reservist kind of a taste of what it is.
Yeah. So again, going back to, you know, serving continuous active duty and did a couple of deployments, one to Okinawa, Japan, one to Somalia in Mogadishu, actually, you know, not too long before, you know, most people are familiar with Black Hawk Down. I was not part of that, but I was in Mogadishu a couple of months before that happened. So that's my, you know, continuous full-time job at that point in time, and then went to the reserves. And then, yeah, you're doing your civilian job and then Friday afternoon, you know, you've worked hard all day long and now you're driving someplace to go be part of a reserve unit. And then you're working, doing Marine Corps stuff until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And then you're repeating that on Saturday morning and you're up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning and working all day. And maybe you're wrapping things up by 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. And then you do Sunday and if you're lucky, you get out of there at 5 o'clock, maybe in the evening Sunday. Right. You know, but there's just a lot of work to do. And so, and you're trying to be current and relevant, even though everybody else is doing Marine Corps for a full-time job every day. And now all of a sudden you show up and you need to be in this position of basically I'm hitting the ground running and I don't want to be thought of as, hey, there's this idiot that's coming in for the weekend or whatever. It's like, no, you need to actually be up to speed as much as you possibly can. And then you go back to your day job Monday morning. And so it's just this kind of hurry up, stop, start, stop, start. If I was using a car analogy, and of course, hopefully no one would ever drive their car this way. But if you had your car,
a lot of people, trust me.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's people who drive their cars quite poorly, but imagine, you know, you got your car parked in the garage, but the only time you ever actually drive that car is you jump in the car and you slam it into reverse and you push the gas pedal all the way to the floor. Well, no one would drive out of their driveway that way, except for maybe James Bond or something, right. You know, and then you jam it into forward and you push the gas pedal all the way to the floor. And I think reservists over the last 20 years have kind of had to operate that way. There was a time where, you know, you could come and go, you could do your one weekend a month. You could, you know, somewhat sedately to a point, you know, operate. But over the last 20 years, it hasn't been that way. Reservists are deploying all over the world. They're going and plugging and playing into a staff in Hawaii or Germany or somewhere else for weeks at a time or months at a time or even years at a time.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to balance, you know, like everybody else, family life. And then, but then this other career, and how do you deal with this other career where you're telling the boss, hey, I got to be gone for 2 weeks or a month or 3 months or 9 months, you know, and there are protections that by law, you know, supposedly hold your job open for you to go back to that job and all that kind of stuff. But to drive this car, you know, at full speed out of the, you know, okay. And that's kind of how it is. So you show up at a Marine unit, and everybody looks at you like, okay, you're supposed to be up to speed like everybody else, but they've been doing this every day. And now you just showed up, you just walked through the door, and nobody wants to show up someplace and look like an idiot or feel like an idiot. And so balancing that, you know, in some ways, I think it's actually more stressful than if you were just doing it full time all the time,
right?
Because then you can focus on the fact that, okay, every day for the next 10 years or 20 years, I'm a Marine. But when you're in the reserves, it's like, okay, today I'm a Marine. Tomorrow I'm a landscape.
You wear a lot of hats.
I'm a landscape guy or an IBM guy or a firefighter or whatever. It's like back and forth, back and forth. So it's definitely a challenging situation. And, you know, I loved it. And I did it for a long time. And a lot of people do. And I applaud them all for their service because it's not an easy thing to do. And so, yeah, it's just kind of a kind of crazy back and forth thing. And, you know, there are people in reserve fire departments that do the same kind of stuff. Like, how do you stay up to speed being an EMT? But my day job is I'm an accountant, you know, you know, it's the same kind of thing. And so, you know, people who have dual careers or whatever are much to be respected. So, yeah.
And you mentioned your family. I mean, that's a hard thing because, you know, not only do you have both jobs and not only do you have yourself, but you have your family, you have your wife, 36 years and three sons, 27, 25 and 17. How did right. you balance that family aspect?
Yeah.
And what were some of the things that you got away from?
You know, they've experienced them, not like, somebody who's doing the full-time active duty thing, but they've experienced military life as well.
Right.
And they know what it's like for dad to be gone. And, you know, my wife knows what it's like to, you know, I made some comment to her one night about, you know, just serving in the military, and this was post-military time. And, you know, she doesn't really wear her emotions on. She's a tough lady. She doesn't wear emotions on her sleeve, but I made some comment. And she said, "What do you mean?" And I made some further comments. And she said, "You know, if you had been working at IBM, I wouldn't have worried about whether you're coming home at night or whether you're ever coming home again." Right. And I thought, wow, yeah. You know, so I think my family dealt with that a little bit. Like, you know, dad's gone right now, you know, and he should come back. And what he's doing is may or may not be all that dangerous. You know, there was a couple of times where I'm on ship or something and I'm flying between a couple of ships on a helicopter. And, you know, I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. You know, the things that I thought that were, you know, the stuff I thought was the most fun in the military was also probably the most dangerous. And so, you know, so I thought it was awesome. And my wife probably thought, I hope he's coming home, you know. So it put some stress on the families. Definitely military families have stressors that, you know, again, I can, you know, police and fire. You know, husbands, wives, kids kind of, I think they wonder in the back of their mind, is dad or mom coming home? Right. And that's hard on them. It's hard on them. And, you know, and it's hard on them in a way that, cause I have control to some extent over what I'm doing, but they have no control. They're sitting at home wondering whether dad or husband or wife is coming home. And the military service members just, hey, I'm out here doing this thing and it's great and all that. And so, it's an interesting dynamic, to say the least. And my wife put up with a lot, and we've been married 36 years. And so, you know, she's a saint.
She's got to be a tough lady.
She's a saint.
I love it.
Yep.
And that leads perfectly into, you know, in 2014, you founded Soul Survivor Outdoor. And realistically, it's, you know, an outdoor adventure company that serves active duty military through resilience and spiritual fitness programs. Tell me more about this because it's so amazing. I mean, I love watching the promo video but tell me more about this project. And you can go to soulsurvivoroutdoor.org and find out more, but I want you to tell us more. What was the premise behind starting this, Rick?
You bet. So at one point in time, my job as a Marine was taking care of wounded Marines and helping them make a successful transition into the civilian sector. And that just really highlighted for me a lot of the issues that folks have serving in the military. That's a lot of times people don't have very solid foundations for living, right, let alone living in a high tempo, stressful environment. And having been a Christian for many, many years, I know that, you know, being married 36 years and having kids and everything else, there's no way that I do that or function without God in my life. Right. And I thought, is there a creative way to share with these folks, the faith perspective, you know, what resiliency means with God in your life and having a firm foundation so that when the trials and tribulations and good and bad and ugly come into life, how do you bounce back from that? And faith has been so important to me. And the typical service member is not looking for a church necessarily to go to, or maybe not even talking to their chaplain or pastor or anything like that. They're not even thinking about that stuff, but it's so important. And so it's like, can you have a way to engage the military in this faith discussion? And so at the time, it was really about engaging military service members that are currently serving and they're wounded. But it's like, all right, is there a way to engage military service members who aren't in that position, who are currently serving on active duty, so that you can maybe get ahead of the curve in terms of the issues that people are going to experience and say, hey, before you get too far down the road in your military career, have you considered faith as a foundation for living And as a Christian, you know, do you know who God is? Do you know that your purpose is even bigger than the Marine Corps? And Marines don't like to hear that. They like, no, Marine Corps is the biggest purpose you can ever have, right? You know, and I'm sure, you know, fire and law enforcement, it's the same way. It's like, you know, this is my ultimate purpose. And it's like, and that is an important purpose, but it's part of your bigger purpose. It may be what God even made you for, but it's like, what's the foundation for living? So, you know, so as a result, we did some outdoor stuff. And then going forward, leaving the military as an active duty guy, I said, you know, can we basically have an engagement with the military community and have a discussion of faith and point people towards having a firm foundation that involves God, as opposed to, you know, having no foundation whatsoever. And ultimately, their lives just completely fall apart as a result. And so we use outdoor adventure to do that. So we have an activity, and it might be rock climbing or skydiving or skeet shooting or sailing or surfing or some kind of outdoor activity. And then we sit down, we have a meal, and then we have another service member or somebody who's been a service member, share their faith perspective and pointing people to a foundation in Christ. So that life looks different. The stresses maybe don't get to you to the point that they do, because you kind of understand yourself in the greater context of, you know, I have a purpose because God made me. I have a purpose because, and Marine Corps is part of that, or law enforcement's part of that. But more importantly, God made me on purpose for a purpose. And sometimes I don't even know what that purpose is, but at least I can hold on to the anchor, right? I can hold on to the anchor that is, hey, you know, if I just take one more step, God's going to point the way, as opposed to it's just hopeless because I don't have any ultimate purpose. And when life's over, it's just over. It's like, no, I just feel like that's just such a lie. And so this faith dynamic and piece of this, and then even if people don't even buy into that, it's like, all right, there's outdoor stuff that I can do. You know, there's life is worth living. You know, so many people talk about, suicide prevention, and a lot of times it boils down to don't kill yourself because of these 10 reasons. And I say, no, actually it's more like you ought to want to live because of these 10 reasons. There's just so many different reasons why you want to live as opposed to why you don't want to die. And so that's all part of the dynamic too. And so, so we started this thing in 2014, and then we host active duty military at events during the week. It kind of ends up being part of their training curriculum, so to speak. They don't have to take time off. They don't pay for it. The military doesn't pay for it. It's all privately funded, and it all fits kind of neatly in this box of resiliency and being spiritually fit, because the military these days says, hey, it is important for us to be mentally, physically, spiritually, socially, and emotionally fit.
Right.
And that makes a whole person. And so we fit into that category, and then we invite everybody. You know, we have Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, pagans, Norse pagans, you know, people who don't believe in anything come out to our events.
Yeah.
It doesn't change what we say. We still point them to Christ and say, hey, you know, we believe the Bible says you were made in God's image from the beginning. And it's really important to understand that, because, you know, you're not a cosmic accident or something that when life is over, it's over. It's like, no, you have a long enduring purpose beyond even this life. And then that communicates value to the individual, and they start seeing themselves as they have intrinsic or ultimate value, as opposed to my value is only about my job or my career or something else. And so it just sets the right tone, the right foundation. It kind of recalibrates people for living. And I think, you know, it just makes people have a much more positive attitude about life in general. And then if they fully embrace what we're sharing with them, then, you know, I think it makes them a really total and complete person. So
that's amazing. And you've hosted over 14,000 active duty military with these outdoor events. And these outdoor events are ranging from climbing to skydiving to surfing. How do you pick and choose which events? And are there people that come in that just are scared to even do that?
Oh, for sure. And we, you know, part of it is, you know, we want to get the military personnel off of the military installations or bases.
Yeah.
We want to give them something fun and engaging to do, probably something they would not normally do on their own. They might say, hey, I want to go skydiving someday, or it would be cool to go rock climbing, but I don't know how I would do that. Or, gee, I live right next to the ocean, but I don't know how I would actually learn to surf. And so we make those opportunities available. And then sometimes we have vendors that are involved. Sometimes we have, when it comes to surfing, we have a bunch of, you know, basically semi-pro surf instructors and a whole community of people that have come around us to help instruct surfing. When it comes to rock climbing, we have some key vendors that we've used. And even going back to the very first thing that we did, even before we were a nonprofit, when I was on active duty and had those wounded Marines, we did rock climbing with an organization called Cliffhanger Guides. They're up in Joshua Tree National Park in California. A lot of people will be familiar with that location. And we still use that particular vendor, nearly 10 years later. And so, they're part of what we do. They provide the technical prowess and the actual hanging of ropes and instruction, from everything from tying knots to how to climb up the side of the rock and all that kind of stuff and do it safely. So we just do fun, engaging outdoor activities because we know that young people, they kind of need something to get them motivated to get out of the barracks and off of the base. And if I said, hey, let's just sit down and have a pizza and open our Bibles, there's a lot of value in that, I think. But it might not be enough.
You might have pushback, right?
Right. It's not enough of a spark to get them interested. And it's like, hey, let's go do something fun and engaging. And then would you actually sit down and listen to another service member who has a story, somebody who served with the SEAL teams, somebody who did normal, maybe more mundane military stuff, but they had all kinds of pluses and minuses to their life. And now they've earned the right to speak with the existing service members. And so it just creates kind of a community on a short duration event where it's like, hey, come out here, give us the chance to show you how to surf and meet our people and see that they're normal and they're cool and they care about you. And then, hey, now we want to share a little bit about our faith and what that means to us and why it might be important to you. And let's have some food, and we do it all for free. And so, so that formula seems to work pretty well. And now the military just is coming to us on literally a daily basis, asking us, hey, how can we do this? Had a commander, that I spoke to the other day, a colonel in the Marines, who basically said, you're bringing light. And these events are important, even though a lot of times the military would say, hey, we've got a grind to do, we don't have time to do this. He said, actually, they don't have time not to do this, because it can unplug, de-stress, recenter, recalibrate. And then this is paying huge dividends going forward. So he's like, I'm all about it. Let's do more.
That's huge. What does that mean to you though, Rick? What does that mean to you to be able to do this as a legacy?
It's pretty motivating because it drives me. It gives me purpose. Heck, it my faith has grown in ways that it never would have grown before. Because how the heck do you raise money to be able? We raise about $500,000 a year to be able to do this stuff, because it takes a ton of money to be able to, take people out and go skydiving or rock climbing or do these things. It takes earthly treasure to be able to make this happen. And so that's a challenge. So, and I think at the beginning of this, my wife kind of looked at me like, are you having a midlife crisis? Can you go get a regular job? Our faith has grown in those ways. And I'd say for me personally, it's like, God's just tested me, tried me, and then it's exciting. On day, it's kind of like, class 4 rapids on a river. We just did that a couple weeks ago in Idaho with a bunch of Marine Corps recruiters. Sometimes that's both fun, but it's also terrifying. It's exciting. It's exhilarating. It's worrisome. There's a whole bunch of emotions that are wrapped into it. And you know what? Running a nonprofit is like that. It's like some days it's exhilarating. Other days it's terrifying. And some days it's like, where's this next check going to come from? So it's very rewarding. It's a lot of fun. I've got adult children or adult. They're not children anymore. They're adults. And, and they're like, Dad, this is great. It encourages us to step out in our own faith, our own walk, to basically go, do I trust God in a real tangible way? Like to take some risky steps and go, you know, if you say you're a person of faith, are you willing to put it on the line or not? And then we have at times done that. And my sons have said that encourages us to do likewise and live our faith in a real tangible way. And then when I hear that from one of my sons, I'm like, wow, now I'm even more encouraged. And this is not a prideful thing, because you know, we don't know each other very well, but you know, yeah. There's such a part of me that's such a knucklehead. Like, you know, I'm nobody. I mean, really, you know, I'm nobody special. I'm just somebody who said, okay, I see a need. Let's try to figure out how to go meet it. But beyond that, it's like, I'm not special. You know, I've messed things up. I've done things wrong. You know, if you're a Christian, you know, people are like, is this somebody who's free of sin or wrongdoing? It's like, that's not my story. You know, right. I'm just as human as everybody else. And I've got dirty laundry like everybody else. And my wife will be the first one to say, yeah, you know, he ain't perfect, you know, but he's walking it out, and it's a relationship with the Lord, and it's a day-to-day thing that's going on. And that's what we're sharing with these folks. It's like, look, you know, God cares about you. He wants to know you. He wants you to know him, but it's not perfect, because you're not perfect. So it's more of a walk. There's probably some people in your audience that sang hymns once upon a time ago. You know, there's a hymn that says, he walks with me, he talks with me, he calls me his own. So it's like a relationship, like we're walking down the road together. So
right.
We just say, hey, people, God wants to know you. His son died for you. You know, let's go walk out this journey together. And it's going to be so much better when you know the one who wrote the human manual for how to do things than if you try to do it on your own. And that seems to be working really well. And as a legacy, I guess, it's like, you know, I want my sons, you know, the people who follow my footsteps to walk out their faith in real tangible ways too. So that would be the legacy, I guess.
I love the power of your voice and how you are vulnerable to all of these aspects. And at the same time, it's the collaboration of all the different aspects of your life that you've brought into this. I mean, what a gift you've given people. It's amazing. I love it. Hey, Rick, I appreciate you being on today. I've got three questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Perfect. Perfect. I love it. All right. And the first question, if you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
Yeah, I'd say, God, don't be afraid to take risks more so, you know, step out in faith more often. And let God, you know, step in and make it happen, you know, because there's this triad of basically, you know, risk, faith, and responsibility. And we struggle with that. Like, how am I responsible? How do I take healthy risks? How do I behave responsibly? How do I exercise my faith? Well, I'd say, you know, you got to walk it out. You got to step it out. And I would say, you know, take some more risks and be willing to step out more often, because you can't, you know, you only have one life to live. So, and I'm not talking about doing stupid things, I love jumping out of a plane. And some people, my wife actually feels like maybe that's kind of stupid, but you know, I love jumping out of a plane, but you know, so if you're going to jump out of a plane, I suggest using a parachute, you know, so that's healthy risk taking. But it's worth it. And so life's an adventure and you only get to do it once. And so I'd say, you know, take more risks.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. You need a parachute when you jump out of a plane. That's very good advice.
Yeah. if you want to do it, at least if you want to do it twice,
yeah.
You do.
I love it. All right. The second question, if you could, everybody goes through challenges and struggles in their lives. And if you could give people two habits to incorporate into their daily life to continue to push forward, move forward, what would those two things be?
Well, I got to say, you got to have God in your life. You know, you've got to, because you got to have him in order to be able to be forgiven, you know? And right. So you got to keep your account short, right? Like you got to start with him. And when you walk with God, and you blow it, be really short in the sense of don't waste time asking God to forgive you. And then very much like that is then don't waste time going to others and asking for their forgiveness. So have a relationship with God and keep your account with him short, but then keep your account with individuals short too. So because, you know, we blow it even with our kids, you know, we feel like, oh, I'm the dad. And if I tell my son, you know, hey, I really messed up and I need your forgiveness. Yeah. That somehow betrays weakness or something. I would suggest that it betrays exactly the opposite, because it's like, what kind of man or woman does it take to say, please forgive me? Well, it takes somebody who's got a lot of courage to do that. So have a strong relationship with the Lord, and keep your accounts short with him. When you blow it, you know, don't waste any time asking for forgiveness. And when it involves other people, go to them and seek out their forgiveness. They may not give it to you, but at least you be the one to go first and be the bigger person and ask for forgiveness.
Makes sense. I like this. Now this last one's gonna be fun, Rick. If you could have coffee at a firehouse table, in essence, like no questions off the table, with three people that can be deceased or alive, who would those three people be?
Yeah. Wow. That's a really tough one. So, okay, it kind of gets a little political. I love Ronald Reagan, so a lot of people might not like him very much, but I love him.
This is your table, though.
That's right, okay? So, you know, so don't hold it against me, but I'd love to pick his brain and learn more, you know, from him and, you know, where his faith really fit into that and, what you know, was it legit? Because, you know, there's a lot of books that talk about it. So I'd like to just learn from him firsthand, like what does faith look like? And, you know, what did the weight and responsibility look like? And how could he go from being shot a few months into his presidency to, you know, continuing and not just saying the heck with it? Because it's hard to, like, what kind of tools can you have to basically exercise courage in the face of times when people don't like you very much, because it's easy when you're just doing a bunch of fun stuff and, you know, and all that. But when the chips are down and everything, like, so I'd like, and of course I mentioned my faith in God and I have my own thoughts sometimes about Jesus. I'd love to sit down and talk to him, you know, literally, you know, and, you know, if you're Christian and you believe prayer is real, you know, I believe I'm actually having a conversation, but I'd love to be able to actually sit down across the table from him and go to lunch, and I want to say, Jesus, would it be true if I said to you, hey, let's go to lunch, would you ask me where I want to go to lunch? Because I kind of feel like that's what he would do. He'd be like, let's go to lunch. And I'd say, well, where do you want to go? And I think he would say, where do you want to go? You know, is that actually true?
And
so much more, you know. I spent all those years in the Marine Corps, but I really admired General Patton, who's an Army officer. And that guy's just about as real and gritty as you can possibly get. I mean, his language was super colorful. Yes. And yet I think he had a strong faith. And so I'd love to be able to sit down and talk to him about, strategy and tactics, but also, you know, like, where did his faith fit into that whole thing? Because, he really concentrated on where the gaps in the battlefield were, and he really poured into the places where that were having success. And so I'd like to hear more about that and what kind of the calculus was for why he did what he did and how his faith factored into it. So, yeah, I guess, you know, those are the three folks I'd want to talk to.
I love that. Well, Rick, it's been such an honor to have you on. Make sure you go to soulsurvivoroutdoor.com org to find out more if you're a military member, or to just donate, because it's such a huge project to be able to help people to reach that next level and reach that potential. So, Rick, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on, and love to jump on a call with you some other time. And I'd love to, you know, be out in Wisconsin and meet you in person some point. Just the amazing things that, you know, I was explaining to somebody the other day. I'm going to sit on a podcast, and the guy has the Guinness World Book record, and he's run full triathlons, the running part, in a fireman's get up. And they looked at me like, wait, what?
Going to visit him.
Yeah, exactly. So I love it, but I really appreciate you having me on here, and it's been fun. And hopefully you can be one of those people I can sit down to coffee or lunch with actually across the table in the near future. So thanks again.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast, and please share this episode with a friend or family. To find out more about Fireman Rob or reach out about a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.